Thank you so much for that song, that anthem of hope. We need it right now. A minister is driving down the road and is stopped for speeding. The police officer smells alcohol in his breath and sees an empty wine bottle on the floor and asks, "Where have you been drinking?" The minister shrugs and says, "Just water." The trooper asks, "Then why do I smell wine?" The minister looks down at the bottle and exclaims, "Good Lord, he's done it again!" The last 10 days in particular, our world has experienced so much pain that it becomes particularly obvious to all of us that our world is in dire need of some healing miracles. With the tragedy of the Humboldt Broncos hockey team and the drastic decision of the U.S. along with England and France to bomb Syria as a sign of military strength against the Assad regime's use of chemical warfare, you and I are witness to immense pain and suffering in our world. Our hearts are broken with grief for the family and friends of this close-knit hockey team and community and the loss of these young people. And our hearts are also heavy for the people of Syria, who have already lost so much and now are suffering so much more. And we wonder, what will Russia's response be to this destruction? Will it send the world into further pain? Will this be the beginning of even more violence in this beautiful world in which we live? And each of us may have our own various challenges and hurts and griefs that we are bearing right now. And we too are seeking healing and hope for our lives. And we at Knox espouse the four values. We chose them this fall: compassion, inclusion, joy, and spirituality. And we wonder, how can we use these values? How can we live out values in heaven's name to alleviate the pain of the world? And sometimes it feels as though we carry the weight of the world on our backs. I know since I was a young girl, I've been bent over with poor posture. And I think it's from feeling that oversense of responsibility of the weight of the world. Our story this morning is of the bent woman, is the story of a woman bowed and burdened by the pain of the world on her back. And we are told that she has carried the pain of the world on her back for 18 long years. Several years ago, I had the privilege of being in a Bible study with a New Testament theologian, Walter Wink, an American author who has written several books on the powers and principalities that subdue the world and hold us in bondage. And through that Bible study, he encouraged us to actually embody the stories of Jesus so that we can fully understand and live into them. And so he had us walk around the room, bent over, doubled over in half, for several minutes, so that we could begin to know what living with that burden would be like. And so because we were studying this bent woman in our story this week, our Bible study class, we did the same thing. We walked around the room, doubled over. And in that short time of walking around for the length of the reading, we discovered how isolating and alone this woman must have felt, not being able to look up into the eyes of anyone and meet anyone face to face, only looking at the world from a very low vantage point. And we wondered about the crippling pain she might have felt all those years being frozen in that position. And we realized how forced she was by her body to have such a limited perspective of life and not being able to engage like everyone else. And we wondered, had she been born with that crippling disease? Or had that disease come gradually with time and age? We wondered, did she have family that supported her in her disability? How alienated was she from the community? Did the others in the synagogue even know her name? And would they have judged her for coming into the synagogue as a sign that, because people back then saw disability as a sign of punishment by God, her illness as punishment. And I know even we today, sometimes when things, bad things happen to us over and over and over again, we begin to feel, did I do something wrong? Am I being especially picked on by God? We've seen death and destruction and illness as coming from God. But then something changes for this woman. Miraculously, she gathers the courage to enter into the synagogue. We assume she's alone. And we all know how difficult it is to walk into a place that we're not necessarily welcome, or we come to a church for the very first time not knowing a soul, and how difficult, how much courage it takes to walk into a church without knowing anyone. And so she comes to the synagogue, perhaps that she's heard that a guest preacher who is a healer has come to town. She has this glimmer of hope that maybe something different can happen for her. And Jesus is teaching. And for whatever reason, he notices her, a corner of his eye, he notices her hovering there, holding back. And he calls out to her. And he claims for her liberation. He says, "Woman, this spirit, you are set free from this crippling ailment." And he walks over to her and he lays his hands on her. And it is in that healing touch that she is able to rise up, as you sang about. She was able to rise up. And he calls her daughter of Abraham. In other words, daughter of God. You are a part of this community. He affirms her dignity and worth as a child of the living God. She is not in bondage by evil. She is reclaimed by the love of God. It's an amazing thing, her courage, her bravery. And it's an incredible thing that out of Jesus' hands, from this God source, flows this powerful healing love, so powerful that she's able to rise up and face the world in a new way. She is fully liberated. And this is an incredible miracle of healing. But I think what happens next is the real teaching and the profound lesson in this story, and why it has been remembered and saved and told to us. We are told that some of the people in the synagogue rejoice with her over this wonderful healing and liberation that she experienced, while others got caught up in the rules and regulations, so much so that they scolded the woman for daring to come for healing on the Sabbath day, and pointed fingers at all the other people who may have come that day hoping to be healed, because they begrudged Jesus for breaking the Sabbath restriction about not working on the Sabbath. And in their judgmental, critical attitudes, they missed completely the miraculous joy of the healing and her liberation. They missed the joy. They missed the miracle that was present in that moment, because they were so consumed with the rules and regulations. And so Jesus lets them have it. And he sets them straight on what has really taken place, and he calls them a bunch of hypocrites. "You hypocrites!" Which literally means an actor who wears a mask on a stage. That's what a hypocrite is, someone who wears a mask, who pretends they are one thing but is in reality another, who isn't living with integrity. And he challenges them by saying, you have far more compassion for your animals who you would give drink and food to on the Sabbath day than you have for this poor woman who has been bent over for 18 years. Where is your compassion for her? She's been in bondage to her illness. I have liberated her and set her free. God has done this. And you missed it. Where's your compassion? This story, like all the stories of Jesus, begs each of us to ask the question, who am I in this story? Am I the person who lives bent over with the cares of life and burdens of the world on my back, but has just enough hope and courage to make a change? Or am I the person who, like Jesus, has compassion for those who suffer and reaches out to affirm and give dignity and touch and remind people that they are worthy, beautiful children of the living God so that they might experience freedom and liberation and healing and hope and rise again? Or am I the person that glimpses the beauty of a miracle and recognizes it and is able to fully rejoice with the blessings of others and enters into the joy and celebration of that and throws a party? Or am I the critical, judgmental person who gets so caught up in the rules and regulations and the shoulds and the shouldn'ts and the details and minutiae that I miss the miracle and joy and the miraculous beginning of a newly liberated life full of promise and possibility? I'm guessing that at different times in our lives, we have been all of these people. But the question is, who do I choose to be today? It is so easy for the care and the pain of human existence to weigh us down. Every time we turn on the news or open a paper, we hear more pain. And we have no control over that. But we do have a choice about how we respond to that pain. We have a choice about, will we add to the pain of the world by carrying bombs? Or will we seek to try and alleviate the pain? Because choosing bombs and violence as a means for healing the world is just backwards thinking. It will never work. It will only add more pain. So we must find other ways to bring healing to our world. And all week, although we have seen the pain of the world, we've also seen the healers rising up, seeking to live as healers in the world. All week, we have been finding other ways to bring healing to the pain of the world. People around the world putting out hockey sticks at their front doors or wearing sports jerseys to demonstrate their support for the Humboldt Broncos. All sports teams have offered minutes of silence to join in solidarity with the grief of this team and the Humboldt community. Complete strangers have donated millions of dollars to their GoFundMe online to help the families to defray costs of funerals and recovery. And this week at Knox, the healing team hosted a healing house, bringing healing to so many lives. And in defiance of so much sorrow and grief in the world, 24 women from Knox went away to affirm and share the importance of joy in our lives. And today at 3 p.m., we're holding our monthly prayer and healing service for people to come and experience the power of being in the sacred presence of our healing God. And every Sunday, we come here to this place, whether or not we are bowed with pain, to rejoice in the joy and miracle of life, and to pray for the healing of the world. And don't think for one minute that this act every week for coming to church is pointless. Gathering together in community is an open act of defiant hope. It is our way of saying we are coming to affirm the presence of the holy. And we believe that the presence of God is alive and well and working in this world. And we're going to sing about it. And we are about liberating lives one heartbeat at a time. And we gather here week after week, even if our own lives might be full of pain or struggle. But we come to affirm the joy and beauty of human life and rejoicing in the gifts of life. And we choose to see the wonder and the miracle, the beauty that is all around us. That is no small thing. That is radical. That is countercultural. That is an act of radical defiance in a world that wants to focus on the heartache and the suffering and the struggling. We don't ignore it, but we affirm that there is still beauty and still joy and still love operating in this world. And we come together every week to pray for the healing of this world. And it does make a difference. Science is proving that it is making a difference. Bruce Lipton, the author of Biology of Belief, talks about the work of pioneering cellular biologists who's talking about that inside our bodies and minds, there is an electromagnetic field which stretches well beyond our physical form. The ancient mystics called it our auras. And they have discovered that the heart generates the largest electromagnetic field in the body, about 60 times greater in amplitude than the brain. And they have proven that when two or more of us gather with a shared energy of intent, that the religious have called prayer for years, and is now being called intention or new thought, that the energy multiplies, forming a collective field of harmonic resonance, much like when multiple instruments strike the same note. From a wide variety of experiments harnessing the collective intent and meditative energy of groups, they have noticed that in high crime areas, in war-torn countries, in support of individual health challenges, using that collective thoughts and energy have a measurable impact on the physical world around us. Crime rates lower, peace treaties are signed, miracle healings happen. Our consciousness is the field that governs the physical world. As we change the field, the world around us changes. Science is showing that our intention can change the world around us. And when one member of the body hurts, we all hurt. And so when one life rejoices, we all rejoice. And when two or three are gathered together in prayer, healing can happen. That's a radical thing that we do every week. And we do it purposefully every week. We sing about God's presence in the world, and we pray for the healing of the world. That's radical. I want to share one more story with you about a community of faith coming together to help an individual and the healing that can occur. It's a story that comes from Africa. It's a story of a 10-year-old student of an African teacher. And one of the 10-year-olds in this African village was trapped in a burning hut that he had accidentally himself set on fire. And this fire had started only at the entrance to the hut, and the flames were so high that he could not get through. And so he told his teacher, "I believe that this was the end for me," and he let out a wild scream. And fortunately for him, his father saw the fire, braved the inferno, went through the flames, and got him out, because he had lost consciousness due to the heat and the smoke and probably his fear. When he finally regained consciousness, he was lying in a room surrounded by the women of his village, who were nursing his burns and offering him food. He could also hear the voices of the men outside and knew that the whole village had come to the support of him and of his family. 2 weeks later, he told his teacher, "The village elders came to my home to perform a ritual partially intended to prevent similar accidents, but also, even more importantly, to teach him how to deal normally with fire. So," he said, "to accomplish this, my whole community built a model hut in the open field, and he instructed him to go in the hut and set it on fire in the same way as in the accident. They had him reenact the accident 3 times. And he told his teacher, "Each time, one of the villagers would rush in to rescue me. In addition, they had me tell my story again and again and again to village members who came to see him and to his family." He said, "From this, I learned as a child the importance of community and the importance that when a tragedy happens to one individual or one family, that is a tragedy for the whole community. And so they come and they take part in the healing of each person." In the words of South African poet in his Zulu poem, "An injury to the head is an injury to the whole person, is an injury to the whole family, is an injury to the whole compound, is an injury to the village, is an injury to the kingdom, is an injury to the world." Today, as you and I begin a new day in a world that is bowed with pain and heartache, how will we enter into it? Will we choose to criticize and condemn those who are trying to liberate and bring new life? Or will we choose to recognize the miracles that are all around us and enter the joy and celebration of life? Will we choose to allow the pain of the world to cripple us and limit our perspective of life and bend us over? Or will we choose to look up from what we are doing and notice the pain all around us and choose to be healers and affirmers of all life, to do what we can for the healing of the world, one heart, one person, one starfish at a time? I know that you are healers on this planet. So may each of us go into our worlds, choosing to heal it one heartbeat at a time. May it be so. Amen.